interview was held telephonically with Mr. Bruce DeArmond on Sunday, February 15, 1998, at 5 o'clock p.m. Mountain Daylight Time. Interviewer is W.A. Connors, a private researcher specializing in the history of Project Sign. This interview is copyrighted 1998 by W.A. Connors. All rights are reserved. Albert B. DeArmond was a member of the Project Sign team, which was located at Air Materiel Command's Intelligence Division, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton, Ohio, from late 1947 until mid-1949. He was co-author with Mr. Lawrence Trutner of the team's technical report entitled Unidentified Aerial Objects, Project Sign.
Hi, Bruce. Thank you very much for taking time to reflect on your father's life. Could you tell me a little about yourself?
Well, my name is Albert Bruce DeArmond. I was born November 28, 1949, Cook County Hospital in Chicago, Illinois. I was premature and stayed in the hospital for 2 weeks. Then I was adopted by Albert Bonnell DeArmond and Christine Bruce DeArmond, who lived in Dayton, Ohio. They took me there, and to my recollection, I stayed there until 1952. I could be off a little bit. Then we moved to El Cajon, California. We stayed there till I was in first grade. I think that was 1956 or 57. We moved to Santa Barbara, California. And I stayed there until about 1970, and I moved to Northern California.
What do you do for a living now, Bruce?
Right now I'm a drug and alcohol counselor at Bridge Counseling in Las Vegas, Nevada.
Oh, well, sounds like a very interesting job.
It's pretty rewarding.
I'm sure it is. Could you give me some insight into your father, who he was, any recollections about him? What did he look like, that kind of thing?
Well, my father was about 6 feet two. He weighed probably 240. Big, tall guy, real happy. He was bald, just like I'll be in a few years. He was extremely intelligent, and a lot of the times I felt like he had to talk down to me. He was a good guy, but he wasn't real touchy-feely. I think he was more intellectual than he was emotional.
Mm-hmm.
He always was real guarded with his emotions. But he treated me very well, stood by me through lots of problems. I was a drug addict for years, and he always hung right in there with me and tried his best to get me out of trouble.
Cool. Could you tell me where he was born? Was he an American citizen, or was he naturalized?
He was naturalized. He was born in Nova Scotia, and I don't really know what city or what town or what farm he was born on. His father's name was George DeArmond, and his mother's name, I'm sorry, I don't remember it. I would have to look it up. They moved to Canton, Massachusetts, where his father was a maintenance engineer or some kind of engineer for a factory, I believe. I'm not, it's real sketchy.
Mm-hmm.
And he grew up there. I believe he was, and I'm guessing at this, in junior high or maybe high school. I know that he graduated from Canton High School in 1926.
Mm-hmm. Did he attend college?
He attended MIT and graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Aeronautical Engineering in June of 1930.
Oh, cool. What did he like to do when he wasn't working?
Well, he liked to fly, actually, and he has a commercial pilot's license, but I'm not sure whatever developed on that. Possibly my mother didn't like him flying. I'm not sure. I found his a little card that said he had a commercial pilot's license today. So,
did you ever fly with him?
I think I did, but I was very, very young, and there may have been some sort of incident that I don't know about that stopped him from flying.
Maybe it was your mom.
Yeah.
What did he like to do besides flying?
Well, he really liked working in the yard. When we lived in El Cajon, he put in a swimming pool. and he pretty much did the whole thing. When we lived in Santa Barbara, he was always, every weekend, he was out there working in the yard and planting trees and doing all kinds of stuff. He liked going to the beach. He liked to swim in the ocean.
Oh, so he was an avid swimmer.
Yes.
Oh.
He always took us on pretty nice vacations. I mean, went to Mexico and Hawaii and all over the western United States to almost all the national parks. He was pretty active outdoors. However, he was pretty 9-to-5 Monday through Friday, and that would go on 4 months, and then we'd have a 2-week vacation in the middle of summer.
Mm-hmm. Your father, from what I you know, there was a question I wanted to ask.
Okay.
What color were his eyes?
His eyes were blue. His hair was red.
Red.
When he was younger, and I believe he had the nickname Red. I was adopted when he was 40 years old. He was bald and had gray hair at that point. So I just know that he had red hair because I had heard stories, and I think he told me that his name was Red.
Did he ever mention a person's name by the name of Red Honecker?
Not to my knowledge.
Not to your knowledge, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. Your father was in the Army Air Forces during World War II, from what I understand. Could you tell me what his rank was?
He was in the Army Air Corps, and he would always tell me it was called the Army Air Corps back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he went in as an officer, I believe, in World War II. According to documentation I found recently, he was a captain, I believe, at the end of the war, and then he was promoted to a lieutenant colonel, and his final rank was full colonel.
Hmm. We know from research that your father was involved with Colonel Howard McCoy during the Project Paperclip. And did he ever talk to you about Project Paperclip?
My father never talked to me about it. My mother did after he passed away. She indicated to me that he had, with a group of other officers, gotten Wernher von Braun out of Germany at the end of World War II, and some other rocket scientists. I don't have names on them, but I know I was highly impressed when I heard that he had something to do with getting von Braun out.
Have you ever heard of the term Project Lusty?
I never have heard of that.
Never heard of that?
No.
When you were at Dayton, Ohio, and that, did you ever go with your father to his workplace?
I have no recollection of it. There's only one recollection of Dayton, Ohio that I remember, and that's I fell down the stairs. And I'm not sure that I remember it or that it was told to me enough times that I've created a memory of it.
You fell down the stairs. Could you elaborate on that a little bit?
I was really young, and I pretty much walked in my sleep for years. I've since stopped. But
well,
apparently
I
got up and took a header down the stairs.
Oh, wow. I used to walk in my sleep, and one time my father told me that I ended up head first in a wastebasket. All they could do was hear me, but they could never find me for about an hour. So I guess maybe we both walked that same path in the middle of the night on many occasions. Did your father ever talk to you about his work on Project Signed?
He never brought it up. I had a cousin that was trying to think how much older than me. Probably 15 years older than me, or somewhere in there. In the mid-60s, he said, let's ask your dad about the Air Force Blue Book. And I had some recollection of it, but nothing really concrete. And I said, sure, I'll ask him. So I went up and asked him. I said, look, you're a scientist. You're an intellectual man. Tell me about flying saucers and tell me about this Blue Book project. Was it all a cover-up? And he turned to me and he said, in the year 2025, that material will be declassified and I'll gladly tell you the whole story. Which I replied, I won't even be around in 2025, so tell me now. And he just kept saying, it'll be declassified in the year 2025.
So I take it your father was really kind of close-lipped on what he did.
Absolutely closed lip on what he did, because he had top security clearance, and he was really ethical. I mean, he wouldn't cross that line. So, and to tell you the truth, I never saw my father drunk. I saw him drink wine occasionally at Thanksgiving and Christmas. He just was pretty close to the chest about top secret stuff.
Did he ever have any of his coworkers over to the house that you can remember?
No, as a matter of fact. I don't remember anybody coming over that wasn't related to people from the church that he attended. But I never saw professional co-workers or anything like that.
And what was religion was he?
Presbyterian.
He was a Presbyterian.
And he was a deacon, and he was a religious man. He had high morals. And he got stuck with a real wild kid, let me tell you.
What was your impressions when you were talking to your father about Project Sign and Project Blue Book? And that, did you ever get the feeling where he leaned as far as belief in unidentified flying objects?
Well, this would just be my impressions. I would say that by his response that I believe that he believed in them. But again, he never told me anything other than it was classified. He would tell me the whole story in 2025. Certainly he was. It just seemed to me that he believed in them.
Did he ever mention a book, a treatise that was called An Estimate of the Situation, or did he ever use that term?
I never heard that at all.
Never heard it.
The only conversation we ever had was the one that I've described on that whole thing, and I didn't even know that there was a project called Sign. All I knew about was the Blue Book.
Mm-hmm. Well, I did send you a copy of Project Sign several days ago, so you should be getting it very soon.
Okay.
As far as your father, obviously, was very intelligent and probably very prolific as far as writing goes. Did he ever write any books?
I heard that he wrote two books on aeronautical engineering, is what he told me. Because when I heard that he wrote them, I immediately went and asked him about, hey, where's these books? I want to see them. And he indicated that the publisher had, and I'll put this in modern terms, ripped him off. And I said, well, but don't you even have a copy of them? I'd like to see them. And he pretty much just downplayed the whole thing.
Hmm.
He didn't want to talk about it, and he didn't. And when he didn't want to talk about something, he wouldn't.
Again, the very closed-lipped
yes.
individual. And then after he left Wright-Patterson, and after he left the service, did he have any other jobs?
Well, according to some documents that I found recently, he worked for Ryan Aeronautical. First he worked for Vultee, and that was in the 30s.
Do you know what he did there?
He was structural engineer or something like that. Hold on, let me look in this book and I can give you the exact term. And I know that in the 30s he was involved in the Lend-Lease program with Russia, and I'm not sure what aircraft designation Vultee had, but apparently those planes were the ones that they leased to Russia in the 30s. It says here he worked for Kinnear, Northrop, Vultee Aircraft Companies, 1935 to 1941, stress analyst and structural engineer, chief of stress at Vultee.
Hmm.
Then he was at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base from 1948 to 1951, civilian capacity with Air Technical Intelligence Center. Then, oops, I made a mistake here. Ryan Aeronautical from 46 to 48, then he was called to Wright-Patterson.
Does it say who called him to Wright-Patterson?
I don't have that in this book at any rate. In the documents that I'm going to send you, I'm sure you can find that.
Okay.
You say that
there's a lot of travel orders and things
there's,
in that package.
There's telegrams and lots of stuff. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me because I don't understand military wording very well.
Yeah, all the jargon.
Yeah.
During the transition year from 1947 into 1948 when the Army Air Corps was changing over to the United States Air Force. A lot of documents in that took a little time to get all the jargon and things kind of standardized in that. So that's why sometimes it's real difficult to understand basically what some of the jargon means.
Well, what it says on this document I'm looking at right now, I am presently holding a mobilization assignment with the Air Materiel Command. It is Air Tech Intelligence Officer, Intel Department, HAAMCW/PAFB, Dayton 9, Ohio. My mobilization assignment number is order number 170-DTD, 13 June 1949.
Hmm. Well, those documents will be pretty interesting to see.
Yeah.
And that. After he left Wright-Patterson, did he go anywhere else?
He went back to Ryan Aeronautical in San Diego, California, and he stayed with them until, I believe it was, it was either 56 or 57, and then we moved to Santa Barbara, where he got a job at Tempo Technical Military Planning Operation. It's a division of General Electric, and from what I know of that time, he worked on stress analysis for and guidance for the Polaris missile. For he did a lot of work with the Apollo capsule. I assume he did some work with Mercury and Gemini, but I don't remember him ever saying that. And he worked there until 1971 or two. There was a dive in the aerospace industry, and he didn't technically get laid off, but he sort of worked for Tempo, and he also did consulting work where he went back to Southern California somewhere. I'm not sure where, because at that point I wasn't living with him. I was living in Northern California, so I just know that he was pretty shattered that the aerospace industry took a dive like that, and he was close enough to retirement that he wanted to stay working, but he sort of did consulting work for a while.
So basically, he did a lot of temporary duty at various places like Cape Canaveral.
He went there quite frequently. He went to he used to fly to Albuquerque a lot, and I'm not sure where he ended up. I would assume White Sands. I know that when I watched TV shows one time, we saw something on Albert Goddard. He was very interested in that. I know that when we saw things on Ryan had a vertical takeoff and landing vehicle that they made in the, I believe, mid-50s, and it was on the 20th Century show, and I watched that with him, and he identified the people that were in the film.
Oh, wow.
So he knew who they were. Again, I...
And obviously worked closely with them.
Yeah.
Was he ever on television?
Not that I know of. He may have been, who knows, but I have no idea. I don't remember seeing him on television.
Did you ever go with him when he went temporary duty to Cape Canaveral or out to California?
Well, you know, when you say temporary duty, he was a civilian, but he was also the colonel in charge of the Air Force Reserve. So it was, I don't know if you'd really call it temporary duty. I think it was just business trips. He went there from Tempo, and, you know, maybe he was, maybe Tempo was a cover for the military. I don't know. It's called Technical Military Planning Operation. I assumed he was a civilian contractor for them. I never got to go with him. I wanted to go because I wanted to go to Florida, and he wouldn't take me.
Did he ever give you a reason why?
I was in school, he said.
Oh, you were in school.
He really didn't want to be bothered with trying to watch me. I was pretty wild, and it would have just caused him a lot of grief, I'm sure. In hindsight, I can see that now.
Could you tell me a little bit about how your father died, or when he retired and how he died?
He retired, I believe, in 1971. It may have been 72. He moved from Santa Barbara to California, which was, I lived a few miles up the hill from Sonora in a place called Cedar Ridge. And he moved there because my sister lived in Oakdale, which was about 35 miles from there. And my mother, or my adoptive parents, I call them my mother and father because
Right.
They moved there and they bought a house. I didn't notice a lot of shift in his awareness and what was going on, but towards the end of the 70s, we thought that senility was setting in, because he would forget stuff, and it was pretty gradual. And by 1980, when he died, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. So he may have been diagnosed, in fact, in the late 70s with it. He was pretty scattered at the end. He would put the wrong shoe on the wrong foot, and he would wander off and just start walking. And it was pretty frightening for my mother and pretty frightening for me, too. I didn't have a lot of contact, even though I lived close by. I was pretty wild and didn't, I would see him maybe once every month or so. And I was going to school in Merced, so I was driving 90 miles one way to school all the time. And I would just, stop by occasionally. I did notice that his awareness level and his cognitive ability had diminished rapidly. And I have to admit, I was pretty scared of the whole thing. And I limited my contact, which is regrettable.
Well, and very understandable also.
Yeah.
And that. I was wondering, we were going to get together sometime in June and that for a videotaped interview.
And I'm looking forward to it.
And you're looking forward to it, and so am I. And I'm looking forward to the materials that you're going to be sending. You said that you had some 16-millimeter...
I have 16-millimeter film, and it is... the reel that I will send is stuff from Dayton, Ohio. So you'll be able to see what he looked like during that time. I don't know that the other stuff that I have, it's home movies. And it goes from the time my sister was born until the mid-70s, I think. Or maybe even further than that, I'm not sure.
On the home movies, were there... any parties with military people present?
Absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
I don't ever remember seeing any military people in our home ever. It's almost as if when he was at home, he was at home. I don't even remember. You know, every Thursday night, he went and did his Air Force Reserve thing for a couple hours in Santa Barbara. It was reserve officers, so it was... You know, I have no clue what they did. I doubt they sat around and drank and told war stories, but maybe. I don't know. I'm almost 100% positive my father didn't sit around and drink with anybody, because I just never saw him do that.
Was he a member of any other organizations? Was he an elk or...
No.
Along the Moose?
No. it was the church and his work, and that pretty much covered it.
Is there anything that you would like to ask me?
Well, I'm just really very interested in all this, and I'm so gratified that somebody's doing this work, because I get to find out more about him, because he was pretty closed-lipped about stuff, and this will be an opportunity for me to find out about stuff that he couldn't talk about to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like the Operation Paperclip. I don't think that was classified, but it's not something he would discuss with his family. He pretty much kept his professional life and military life away from us.
You mentioned in an earlier phone call that there was a scrapbook that was kept on the Project Paperclip.
And I'm looking for that even as we speak. Well, actually, I'm not actually looking through any boxes. I still have a couple more boxes to go through. My mother showed it to me when he died, and I got to tell you, I put it in a box and never really looked at it. So I'd like to be able to say I know all about it, but I really don't.
Not at this point, anyway.
and I'm really hoping that I'll come across that, because it had, well, they were newspaper articles, so it'll what it's going to show me, but something, I'm sure.
Going back to your father being in the military, do you have any recollection of any medals or anything that he might have won?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I do. He had a Bronze Star. He had... Gosh, I got this is digging way back because I used to play with him when I was a little kid. I think I still have some of the ribbons. So maybe you can identify them by what colors they are. There was a Bronze Star, I know. And then there was two or three other ones. And I don't really know.
Did he ever talk to you about when he was in the service, where exactly he was stationed and that? And
very,
countries?
Very minimal. He was with a group of guys that went around in a C-47, and I'm not sure what they did, but I imagine they were intelligence officers. He talked about being in India. I know he was in Burma. I know recently, by looking in a photo album of him and these guys, that they were in China. And I really haven't gotten deep into the photo album, but I'm going to send that off to you, and hopefully you can identify who these guys were.
Well, we're going to sure give it a good try.
And, you know, he told me little anecdotal stories about India and things. Or he told me one, at any rate, that do you want me to go into that?
Sure.
Okay. Well, in the late 60s, I had some desire to go to India, and he thought that that was a pretty screwball idea. And he tried to dissuade me by telling me it was a third world country that I didn't even have a clue about, and that living conditions there were pretty tough. The story he told me was him and his officer friends were out for the evening, and they returned to this base, wherever it was, and they had a Sikh guard as a security person at the gate, and this man was sitting on the ground, and this was pretty uncharacteristic for a Sikh because they're pretty professional in their service. And they walked up to him, and they asked him why he was sitting down, and he said that he was waiting to die, and that a snake called a Crete had bitten him, and apparently it's pretty rapid demise after you've been bitten. And the whole idea about telling me the story was how fatalistic people in India were. And I don't know, it just intrigued me all the more.
Did he ever visit Russia?
He was in Russia in the 30s with the Lend-Lease program, and I assume it's had something to do with being with Voltee.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote in Russian. He spoke it, I believe, a little bit. I know that he flew when he was there. And, you know, I have some feeling that maybe there was an accident or something that wasn't severe, but it may have frightened him enough not to fly anymore. Or my mother had some influence on him about flying. But I'm like grasping at straws. They're memories that don't really, they're not really firm, concrete memories.
Mm-hmm. Are there any papers among his boxes that are written in Russian?
The photo album has some Russian in it, and I have seen, as a child, notebooks. Like little hand notebooks that were in Russian, and I thought, like, what is this? I mean, I didn't even recognize Cyrillic alphabet. And he told me it was Russian, and I said, wow, you speak Russian? And he said, well, a little bit. And he could write it and read it, apparently. So he was a pretty interesting guy.
It sure sounds like it. Well, let's see. Let me go through my notes here real quick and see if there's anything that I want to pick up here on this initial phone interview. Can you spell his middle name for me?
B-O-N-N-E-L-L, which was his mother's maiden name.
And he pronounced his name DeArmond.
Yes.
A lot of people, we've only known him as A.B., DeArmond is the way everyone is pronouncing it, but he pronounced it DeArmond.
Yes, and that's the way I always heard it pronounced. So,
is that a French extraction?
It's French-Canadian, yeah.
French-Canadian. That's interesting.
Yeah. In looking at this document that I have now, which is called, I don't even know, Organization Copy Reserve, not on EAD, it says something about Brit Airway Ministry accident investigation, length 2 week, completed 1950, and he was a captain apparently at that time. Then it says Lowry Air Force Base Intelligence, and you know, maybe I'm not reading this correct, but it says Lieutenant Colonel, and that was April 1943. Then Industrial College of Armed Forces, October 1940. Oh, it's typed right on the line. It looks like 46. And then it says Economic Mobile Course, 2 weeks, completed 1950. There is one listing here. It says G/S STA Hospital, Fort MacArthur, California, October 1947. I don't know if that means anything, but that's what's written on this. So, and I'm sure you're going to be able to make more sense of this than I am.
Well, we're going to sure try.
Yeah.
I just want to let you know that we appreciate the initial phone interview. And like I say, I do look forward to meeting you in person in June. And we'll go out and have a good time and have a good steak dinner and things.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me, too. I appreciate you sending the materials to us.
Okay.
And we will get those duplicated and sent right back to you. And, of course, we will keep you informed of everything that we discover and come up with, and that, so you'll know everything that's going on step by step.
Okay.
And that. And I really appreciate you talking with me tonight.
No problem.
Okay.
All
I'm
right.
Going to stop this now, so,
okay.
And then we'll talk.
Okay.